This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't love junior mints. I just don't hate them. I don't understand why they are treated like second-class candy.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Oh, there's a, you there's don't a understand why a candy that is basically toothpaste wrapped up in stale chocolate is treated like a second-class candy. All right, I get it. It's a good, valid question.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Is there a time to change? You know, the three teams I've drafted this year, second-class candy is pretty good.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
It's the candy one. Could have been the cereal one. Know what's in our house? How could you? You wouldn't know what's in our house. Something, grape nuts.
Whose idea was that?
I don't know. Not mine.
Yeah.
No problem with grape nuts. That was in the food mixture, the lost bet.
Yeah.
We talked about.
Yeah, we didn't really hash that out. Was that, who were we talking to yesterday where that came up? Was that Ross?
Rob Gronkowski.
No. Oh, come on.
He was on hold.
Yeah.
Sam Monson.
Oh, right. It was Sam, because he's got the mustache thing going for charity. The way we did that year, I don't know if it was always the plan, but at some point, I remember whatever the lead was. Like, I was in front, and that dictated, however many games I was up, dictated how many things we were going to put into a bowl to make you eat.
Right.
And I think we ended up, four. Because molasses, grape nuts, anchovies, something else. I don't remember.
Whipped cream.
I think there was one more thing. I mean, it was.
I can hear Andrew Filippone making the point that there would be a law of diminishing returns on this.
Uh-huh.
That the more the ingredients does not necessarily make it worse.
Right.
Even two can be enough. Even one. Right. You give me a Brussels sprout, I don't know. I don't want to eat it. I mean, even one ingredient can be offensive.
I mistakenly ordered pizza because, you know, you never talk to people anymore. So I ordered online and I ordered a pizza. And the way I read the menu, it was like, you know, some specialty pie from someplace, you know, pepperoni, mushrooms, sweet peppers, onions. And like in parentheses, it said option to add anchovies. And when I ordered, I definitely did not take the option to add anchovies, but anchovies came on the pizza.
Mm.
And like, I didn't notice it when I opened.
Is that a problem? Really?
Yeah.
Not a fan?
Not a fan.
I love them.
That's the kind of thing that, you know, you open the pizza box right away. From my years and years of experience, you know there's anchovies on a pie.
Yeah.
I didn't notice it and just got on the plate, took a bite, like, oh my God, like, what is happening to me? Tried to pick them off. I had to throw it out.
Threw out the whole pizza.
It was only like a quarter pie from a place. So, you know, it was like six slices, whatever. It wasn't a whole, you know, $30 pizza.
If only you had a panther in your motel room.
Right, I could have saved it and fed
the
it.
Panther
waited until it was old and then fed it to the panther.
It was old.
Right.
Yeah. Ooh. That's anyway. That's interesting. To throw out a pizza because of one ingredient.
I just could not get it. I think
because you're so excited about it.
Yeah.
Too, like,
well, the thing is, it was like an add-on. You know, we got the stuff everybody likes, and I'm looking at the menu. It's like supplement. I always get too much, and just, you know, leftovers and whatever. Right? That'll be another meal for me some night. My wife is working.
Same.
So I get extra. I'm like, oh, you know what? I'll try this. I like the sound of this. Like, I don't want anchovies, but you know, I'm sure I'm fine here. And for some, you know, whatever. Maybe it's mixed up, whatever. Maybe I clicked a box I didn't mean to click. I don't know.
Some people would call.
I just.
You're not the type.
I just thought, you know, whatever.
Maybe it was your mistake.
I'm fine here. Yeah. I am not fine. I had to toss the pizza.
So. Same as you, though, in when it comes to pizza and, you know, the rest. Order way too much on purpose.
Yep.
Like, I'm at a point now where a sort of a let's have a night kind of pizza order will be $100.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, two big pizzas and wings and a pasta or something. Like, it'll be $100.
Right. But I'm going to get, like, if it's a Saturday night, I'm going to get Sunday watching football out of that.
Oh, yeah. Too. Breakfast.
Right. Like, I do that with intent. You know, yep. Like, I know. It's not like, oh, whoops, I ordered too much food. No, I'm ordering too much food on purpose.
One time recently.
I guess that makes it not too much food, actually.
Yeah, it doesn't get thrown out unless it has anchovies on it.
Right.
One time recently, I opted not to do that because my wife sometimes will complain. Be like, we really don't need $100 worth. I mean, it's just us, right? So one time recently, you know, maybe it was like regular time, 5 o'clock or something, pizza, a Saturday, and the night winds down and it's 10, and I just finished it. And the kids, like, both my kids woke up the next morning and they're like, Dad,
where's the pizza?
Where is my pizza? Where's my morning pizza?
Where's the extra pizza?
It's not just Margo spoiled.
Right.
So, all right, well, we learned something there. Today's busy. We've got Paul Hamilton coming up at 3:30. On the Sabres win. We'll talk to Joe Ostrowski today. That's always great. Thursdays at 4. And Chris Trapasso will join us at 5. It's not our area anymore in mid-November and beyond. Next year's draft, right? Like, we're really not. We haven't spent a minute on next year's draft. And I don't intend for our time with Chris to only be, in fact, I don't think most of it will be on next year's draft. I want to talk about this year's draft with him. And we really haven't done that much of that either. Coleman, in terms of the Bills, and I think the obvious to me reason why is because it hasn't gone badly. If it had gone badly and the Bills weren't 9-2, we would be having people would be calling in about that trade and
how
that
could
pick.
They have thought he was going to replace, you know, your name here, Diggs or Davis, whatever your expectations might have been. You know, they needed to do more. But, yeah, I think it's gone pretty well. I hope he gets back soon and that this time away doesn't slow down what looked to me like trust that was growing and an expanded role that seemed to be maybe coming. So, I hope that all still stays on track whenever he gets back.
It is, 22 catches. I mean, it's not off the charts.
No, oh God, no. No.
It's 22 catches. This might be, number one on the list of reasons why I want the Bills to win a championship, or the Sabres, is the fans. You know, people that have invested so much of their lives in these teams. Like, that's number one for the fans. Number two is the idea that I love it in a fantasy context and, you know, in real sports, that if you do that, everything was fine. Like, there's no criticizing a draft pick. To me, there's no point in it. There's no reason to do it. There's no point in criticizing a decision that, this could be coaches too, like coaching decisions too, or even players, that you made in a championship season. I mean, of course, not every move is the right move. Right. That never happens. You know, the Chiefs, it's not like everything they've done has been right the last couple of years. Far from it.
They drafted a first-round running back that can't get a uniform on game days anymore.
Yeah, that did not work out at all.
No.
So, Belichick and his receivers and corners over the years, like, just kind of disastrous. But he's got 6 rings or whatever, so what can you say? You know, that you're still right, but it just doesn't, the critique doesn't get off the ground because you won.
Right.
And I want that one of these years for the Bills, because scrutinizing these draft picks, we always do it, and most of them under Brandon Bean can be scrutinized. You know, these first round picks, Allen, no, but almost every other one can be scrutinized. Right now, we're at a point where their last 3 I think, you know, honestly, well, Coleman isn't a first-round pick, but pick 33. We'll see what that is. I'm not inclined to criticize it based on what's happened so far. I'm even, like we said, like you said, a little bit, you know, encouraged by it. But, you know, there were other guys, and it's 22 catches. Kincaid hasn't really worked yet. You know, like the Bills are good. The offense is good. He's had a couple of good games. Season high this year, 52 yards. I mean, it hasn't really worked yet. He's not a red zone staple. Mm-hmm. He's not a big play threat. Right now, it's just okay. And then Elam before that. So it's not like they're hitting home runs with these picks, but they're winning. And, you know, who cares?
And some of that is offset by
not who cares,
hits but that they got later in drafts.
Right.
I mean, they're getting, you know, they get big contributions. Some of the best players on it. We can't wait for Milano to get back. He's a fifth-round pick. That predates Bean, I think. That's the first draft.
Yeah.
The 17 draft.
Unless he was on the phone.
Taron Johnson is one of those. Yeah, they whatever.
Benford.
And lots of teams. Yeah, Benford especially. Right, Benford. So I don't even, you say that, and I'm thinking, three drafts. Does it go back as far as Ed Oliver? Like, where are we here? I forget about Elam because of Benford. Like, if they were scrambling for a second corner, a, you know, second boundary corner, and it was sort of a turnstile, and they could, then there'd be more, I think, light shined on Elam. But the fact that they got a guy in the sixth round of the same draft that almost from the minute they got here, looked like, okay, he's pretty good, at least. Now I think he's even better than that. You better get ready to start thinking about, you know, paying him at some point. Like, we're there. This is year three. So him, Rousseau, like, there's guys here.
Rousseau
is somebody that's going to have to get paid for sure.
And that's a first-round pick.
Yep.
And that pick has been fine. Like, he's good enough where, I mean, there's no reason to
I think he's,
bounce that around.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah.
And Oliver.
I would advocate paying him. They've already paid Oliver. So, yeah.
But just in terms of, like, the pick itself.
Right.
You know, you can't be upset about him.
No. No, if you, and maybe not everyone agrees, but if, you know, you think it makes sense to give a guy a second contract, there's no way you can convince me that was a bad pick. Now teams may do that just because they can't attract people, they got to hang on to guys, and like the Bills maybe used to be like that. Like, this guy isn't that good, but he'll stay here if we give him $12 million, that kind of thing. I don't think they live like that anymore. They shouldn't be living like that anymore. So you get to a place where a defensive end you drafted in the first round deserves a second contract, and you think it's warranted, that's a good pick.
So, I mean, we've talked to Chris for a few years. I remember him not that excited about Rousseau, and not criticizing Chris for that. Like, mm-hmm. I sometimes will take my cues from him, and we all should know, just how hard it can be to, you know, be right, depending on how it turns out. I mean, right isn't even how I'd want to put it, because doing the best possible job in the draft is also about understanding value, you know, among positions. So if you drafted a kicker in the first round and he was in the Pro Bowl every year, I mean, is that a good pick? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, I probably shouldn't have done it anyway. So it works like that. But if you win, it's all good. And it would be nice. That's second on my list. It would be nice one of these times to have that kind of luxury where we don't have to, you know, worry about it, really. Like, that was your team. Anybody who contributed on a Super Bowl team, it can be said, was worth having.
Validates them being on the roster in the first place, however you acquired them.
Yes. So, you know, with Chris, we talked so much about receivers this offseason, and I'm excited to sort of look back at that. And, you know, there were so many guys. We've got this board in here still with names like Devontae Walker and Roman Wilson on it, who haven't done one thing in the league yet. You know, they might not have been crazy in the second round. I mean, Wilson might have even been a day two pick. I forget. Jalen Polk right there has been, I think, a disappointment for New England. Baker, also with the Patriots, hasn't done anything yet.
Got kind of a bad reputation already there.
Polk was the Patriots trading out from their pick right after the Bills with the Chargers, who took McConkey. And McConkie was one of my favorite ideas.
And that looks real nice.
It does. Like, he looks better than the other guys drafted around him and before him so far. It's circumstances. You know, that's a team that was wide open at receiver, really wide open for a guy as a rookie to make an impact. And I think he's done that. Then you have Leggett and Ricky Pearsall and, of course, Worthy to go with Coleman. So I think that'll be fun to talk about with Chris Trapasso later. James Cook, not a first-round pick, second-round pick, like Coleman, other end of the second round. His last year, his fourth and final year of his contract is next year. And you're not going to want to determine whether it was a good pick, you know, per se, based on whether there's another contract in this case.
Running back is a big asterisk in that department, in my opinion, anyways. So, yeah, we'll see about that. Like, I felt this way about Singletary. Singletary is like the first example of this, right? Like, he's the first running back they draft. And right after they draft him, they do it again with Zach Moss. I'm thinking, okay, well, that's the plan. They have a guy on deck to replace this guy when his contract runs out. Moss didn't even make it to the end of that. And they draft Cook. And, yeah, now I'm of the same mind. Like, I almost, in a way, don't want him to be any better than he is already. Because I think it's just going to increase the desire they might have to pay for him. And, you know, I like Cook more than I think you do. I think he's been very good for them. But I don't want to pay a second. Part of the value in that is, to me, he's a second-round pick. And he's playing on that contract. And that's excellent. If I'm getting that kind of production, I don't want to pay $10 million a year for that. You know, it's like five times what I'm paying for it now, I think, or around that. I'm not sure what his cap number is. But all the same, like, he'd have to do something incredible for me to even think about extending a 4-year, $50 million contract or something. I don't even want to think about it.
He's going to have to score 30 goals, I think, is what you're going to need from James Cook. Right. You better get going
right
on that front. Well, that's another thing, you know, from winning, and we'd never root against that, but you can become more sentimental when you win.
Right.
Especially if it's your first. And the way that every player, you ever think about this? Bills or Sabres, but it's the Bills right now. Every player on the team would be a legend if they won. And you never know who the guy is going to be in the championship game.
That does the thing, right? Sure. Yeah, I was like that when the Red Sox won the first time in 04. And then, like, opening day the next year, it's like, oh, here's Derek Lowe, even though he's not on the team anymore. I think that was right. And maybe Billy Miller and, like, all these guys. And I remember saying on the air, like, I'd have been fine if those guys played in those uniforms until they were 75 years old. I just don't. I kind of want to watch a season of them just taking a victory lap. That's what I really want. And that's not pro sports. It doesn't work that way. You know, you keep going and you keep building and you supplement and change. But yeah, it gets harder to do that when you've won. Cause I think the heartstrings tug at you. You just, you know, who's going to not, we're like that. You know, a lot of fans were like that. I mentioned it this week talking about Hayden Poyer. You know, even they didn't win anything. I mean, you know, they won a lot of football games and made the playoffs a bunch of times, but even that I think was hard for fans to separate. Like, do we really need to do this? I wish you could hang on to him, you know, just cause sentimentality.
And the Red Sox example is akin to what the Bills would be.
Right.
The first.
Right.
You wouldn't have cared if guys on the 2013 Red Sox.
No, right. By then, I couldn't have cared less.
You know, just who even remembers which of those guys left. I mean, if you're a fan, barely do. I'm not a fan, so easy for me to say.
But I was, and I don't.
Okay.
Just don't remember.
Was Yaz still on the team?
Right.
Yaz retired after the 2013 World Series? Maybe. That was the year, right? They did win that
year. Yeah. 2004. 07, 13, and 18
Think,
out of the four. Yeah.
So we're excited to watch that. I'm excited to watch football tonight. The weather seems like legit. Already in Cleveland, snow. And 38 degrees, 35 to 38 degrees, snow to sleet.
Yeah, I saw
wind.
It's rain/snow/snow pellets.
Yeah.
Like, Okay.
That's what that's called.
I think that's freezing rain. But
I'm so okay. far removed from winter anymore. I don't even know what anything's called anymore.
Snow pellets?
That's not sleet. Sleet versus hail.
I don't know what the hell that is.
Snow pellets? Doesn't sound good.
No.
But the Steelers, of course, are very much in the mix here in the AFC. We've talked probably more than anything else this week about the standings and the playoff picture, and the Steelers will have a lot to say about all of this. I mean, if they were to, I think this is not going to happen, but if they were to keep winning, then they're right there with the Bills and maybe the Chiefs for the top spot. Like, they're still in play for that. Just, it seems nobody thinks they're good enough to do that. And they have a tough schedule left. Most of their division games, the Eagles are in there too. So we'll see tonight. They're only about a 4-point favorite as an 8-2 team against a 2-8 team. And that, to me, is alarm bells.
Yeah, well, those alarm bells got my attention because I marched right into a Browns winning the game on the money line parlay.
plus 165.
We bounced this off Joe. This is definitely not good process, I don't think. So I think what you should do is have an idea, right? Like, have an idea of what some of the odds are. I want to go in there and I want to do this and just go do that. Often, this is what I did tonight. We'll see. You know, I don't win very often. I went in there. I'm like, oh, the Browns are that on the money line. All right, let me see if I can. Yeah, the Steelers aren't that good. Jameis maybe has a night. I wasn't really thinking about the weather. I probably should have been. Well, Nick Chubb is back. Two touchdowns for him. Like, I just built like, just until the odds got good enough for me to go, okay. But it's predicated on the Browns winning the game. It's not that crazy, actually. It's Winston having a big passing day, which might have been stupid considering the weather. But Chubb to score twice and Browns on the money line. Let's go.
We'll see if such a mighty force as snow pellets can be enough to change the way Jameis Winston plays football. Because it may not be.
Right. And you know what they always say here? We have plenty of practice with this. The footing, if it's bad footing, that's bad for the defense. They're going to be good. You know, DBs don't know where the receivers are going. So they're going to slip and slide. And maybe if Winston can control it a little bit, there's a big day out there, said the guy who just threw $10 on a probably losing parlay.
You'll be all right either way.
Yeah.
I am also buying into Chubb thoughts tonight. It's definitely a narrative that fits. Chubb thoughts? It's too late to name teams.
Chubb thoughts.
Maybe I'll grab an NBA fantasy team and name it Chubb thoughts.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
But big fantasy decision, go with Nick Chubb or bench him and get to like Waddle or Lockett. Other options that I've got with Adam Krautwurst tonight. But I think it's counterintuitive for a lot of fantasy players. You want to maybe duck Thursdays. And it's that thing about if you get a bad game out of a guy and you stare at that 4 points all weekend,
right,
does not feel good. But a lot of Thursday night games this year have been not that. There have been some huge numbers. Baltimore-Cincinnati.
Like Chase and Burrow.
It was 90 points or something. Like Chase and Henry or Jackson. All those games were huge games. I mean, they didn't have snow pellets that night.
Right.
But he got hurt against the Steelers in primetime last year. It's their big rivalry or one of them. And I bet the Browns would love to, you know, to put it one way, honor him. like for coming back and a 2-8 season. Who knows how much longer he's got after that injury, and he's been around a long time. A lot of tread on the tires.
Yeah.
So I would think they would want to really make a special effort for Nick Chubb.
A lot of tread on the tires, I think you mean.
He's been around a long time.
Right, that's what I mean. He's worn out. Like, not a lot.
Oh, right.
Not a lot of tread means he's fresh. The tires are new.
That's right.
Yeah, he's
I said it backwards.
He's worn out. Right. Good thing I'm here.
There isn't tread.
Right.
There's not as much as you'd like.
Tread is getting thin on those tires.
I mean, 2018, Chubb. Paul next. We'll talk about the Sabres win. Joe Ostrowski, Chris Trapasso as we march through the day. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog, thanks for listening. This is WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
I guess that's it. Paul's on.
I guess. At the end of our conversation yesterday, I said, Paul, do you promise to tell me how the game went tomorrow when we talk? And he laughed. He didn't exactly agree. But Paul,
I can tell you how the game went.
I watched the second period.
Did you?
Look at you.
I know. I don't want applause. But they were shorthanded the whole time. It looked pretty fortunate to get out of that, but I didn't last past that. So I've read your article, and it seems like you were kind of impressed.
Yeah, the good news is they got out of it. They killed the penalties very well, but the bad news is they took the penalties, and they just haven't gotten into their heads yet. Rob was on with Brayton and I earlier, and who better than Rob Ray? Because if you remember in Rob Ray's career, he would get majors and misconducts. He rarely put his team down shorthanded. And so he knew where that line was. He could play aggressively. He could battle. But he didn't necessarily sit in the penalty box and put his team shorthanded. There's that line there, that you have to understand. And the Sabres haven't figured out yet. But between 18:35 of the first period and 16:12 of the second period, they were shorthanded four times. So they basically killed penalties the whole second period. Only had three shots. Well, of course they only had three shots because they were killing penalties the whole period and never got into a flow.
Right, yeah. Like, that's not what you need on a night where your lines were in a blender to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But they did... When you look at it, they gave him another power play in the third period. In five power plays, the Kings only had four shots on goal. I mean, look at McLeod. He spent over 6 minutes killing penalties last night and did a great job. But, and of course, Lukanen, you heard the old thing, your goaltender's your best penalty killer. Mm-hmm. He was. But they did a good job. What I liked as what we saw most of last night, and even in the last 3 minutes or so when it's 6-on-5, was desperation.
Yeah.
Tuck got caught on the ice, Mike. You didn't see the third period for the last 3 minutes and 22 seconds.
That's legit.
And the other guys out there were out there for 244,
right.
247. But they blocked four shots, and they rarely let Los Angeles into the middle. That's been a huge problem with this team, is not being able to guard the slot. And Los Angeles got two chances to score in that all that time. One was over to Byfield. It wasn't the greatest pass in the world, but he wound up breaking his stick, and he couldn't get a stick on it. And the other was right at the end, a one-timer by Kempe. And that's all they gave up, even though they were on the ice basically for the whole time.
Yeah, Paul, I'm of two minds about that. Like, obviously, it's not optimal to have guys stuck on the ice for 2 minutes and 45 seconds or longer in the case of Tuck. But that they got through it without a shot on goal being registered is kind of stunning. I mean, I think that's a great job of digging in and getting that game, back home. If I'd have been awake for that, I would have been tweeting garage, garage, garage over and over again in a panic because these guys can't get off the ice. I mean, oh my gosh, but they did it.
They had five chances to get the puck out. But by the time you've been on the ice for 322, your mind is mush. Your body is shot. So, you don't have – maybe you could have whipped the puck out of the zone if you were fresh. By the time 322 is out, you barely can flip it out.
Right.
And they had five different chances to get it out, but they didn't panic. They got back in defensive position again. I mean – the Kings just wore out Kopitar and Kempe playing catch back and forth and back and forth and back and forth because they couldn't find a play to get it. And then they got impatient shot a couple times. As I said, the Sabres blocked four shots in that scenario. And, it was a really nice job.
Yeah, maybe Joki Haru is the only guy I might be a little hard on because it seemed like he had the cleanest chance to do something else besides ice it. And
yeah. And
that was pretty early on, too, I think, maybe 2.5. It was early in the 6-on-5, and they mm-hmm. could have gotten a change if he'd handled that a little differently, but still.
Right.
Full marks to those guys for being able to gut that out. And, Luukkonen maybe wasn't called on necessarily then. Obviously, no shots got through to him in that 6-on-5 scenario. And even though the shots were modest, right, would it end up being 23 saves in the end, Paul?
Yes.
There were some real nice ones. Like, you've been right on top of it. That Montreal game was an aberration. He wasn't healthy. Probably was a mistake to even put him in that game to begin with. But before that, and then now, he's on a heater, and he looks like the guy from last February now.
Well, the five starts other than the Montreal game, and the reason I know it counts, but I take it out of there because he was playing hurt. He shouldn't have played the game. In those five starts, he stopped 130 out of 136 shots. That's a save percentage of .956 in five games.
Pretty good. Yeah. Jason Zucker, 200 goals. That sneaked up on me. He scored a power play goal. You've got here that it's seven games in a row. That problem seems to have gone away, for the most part anyway. How about this player? Because he's been valuable so far.
He's valuable in so many ways, Mike. I was noticing it in the Philadelphia game because he was out there with Kulik. Almost every time they went to the bench, Zucker would sit down with Kulik and they would talk about the shift. Who better than for Kulik to sit with than a guy like Zucker, who has so many experiences? And then they even put the camera on him last night, and there was Zucker again talking to Kulik. And, you could see Kulik was, like, riveted to him, like really listening. And it was the first game that Kulik had a chance to play center in the NHL, and I think it's such a valuable resource for him to have him there. And I don't think they've had anybody who gets in front of them and tips the puck as well since Reinhardt. Mm-hmm. Reinhardt is so good at it. He's one of the best, if not the best, in the NHL at tipping pucks in front of the net. And Zucker is very good at it, too. If you remember, the first power play goal Buffalo scored this year was him tipping the puck. He's just very good at it. And that was the only thing that was going to beat either one of these goaltenders last night, was somebody getting that type of a goal. And Buffalo got it early into the third period, yes, on the power play, where Zucker is in front of the net and he tips the puck, his 200th NHL goal. And as you mentioned, Mike, the seventh straight game and 10 out of 11 where they've scored a power play goal, and they're fourth in the league on the power play in that time period. And even Dahlin, at least offensively, he's waking up. I mean, he has a seven-game point streak now, where he has 10 points. So the offensive part of Dahlin's game is starting to come.
Yeah, Paul, Zucker, I think we talked about Zucker a couple of weeks ago one day when Mike was out. And he would have been an easy guy to pan in the summer when they signed him because, the Skinner buyout and where's the top six forward and all that sort of stuff. And that's all, I understand that from the fan base. And so you've got a guy like Zucker, $5 million. Oh, he's been around. You might worry that you're buying the cliff here. Like, he's going to show up here and this is the end for him. And far from it. I mean, he's helped them have a third line that I know it's in pieces right now because of Greenway being out, but their third line a lot of these years has been like the island of misfit toys. It's like a washed up veteran and a kid who's miscast in that role. He's eventually going to be a top six guy, but you don't have room because of Skinner or somebody else. So you just plop him down there. And they've got now, when they're healthy, hopefully this comes back around, that line with McLeod and Zucker and Greenway, I feel like it's just not a line they've had in years.
It isn't, and I know they gave up a first-round pick for McLeod. Even if he didn't give the offensive – I think the offensive production is more than I expected. I'm not going to speak for you guys. But even if the offensive production was where maybe I thought it would be, I still think he is exactly what they needed. I mean, that's what they needed to – is a guy who can play both ends of the rink – and does a really good job with it. As I mentioned, he spent over 6 minutes on the ice killing penalties and did a great job. Also, the speed that he brings really helps this team too. And, you know, we were talking, I think it was with Joe and Jeremy about, well, look at all these first-round picks and how many of them really turned into anything yet, and they still could. But at least that first-round pick turned into McLeod, who I think is a – that's fine. And who knows what Savoy – Savoy could end up in the Hall of Fame. He could end up never playing in the NHL. Who knows? I mean, you don't know. But McLeod, at least you have an idea what you're getting. And I really think he has been a key piece, as Zucker also, I think, has been better than I expected to put in there. And I don't think they paid too much for McLeod. Again, you don't know what Savoy is going to turn into, and I think he is exactly what they needed.
You think Luukkonen tomorrow, or wait till Saturday?
I do. Yeah, you got the day off, so theoretically, he could maybe go 3-4. I don't think that's what he's going to do, depending on how many shots he gets against Anaheim. And I know the it's kind of funny because a lot of focus when people talking, you know, interacting with me has been, you know, the Sabres have won 5 out of 7 games, but a lot of the focus has been on the 2 losses and not the 5 wins because they were against Montreal and Philadelphia. Well, Montreal has more than 1 win this year, and they are only 3 points out of a playoff spot, which the Sabres have right now. Last place in the conference is only 3 points out of the playoffs. That's how much it's bunched.
Yeah, the whole thing. I mean, the good news for the Sabres, I think we touched on this a little bit yesterday, Paul, is that the whole division, if not the conference, no one's really run away. Like, you know, the fact that you're at 19 points through 19 games played and in a playoff spot really says a lot. Like, I would expect that to change as the season goes on, but I don't know, maybe it won't. Maybe it'll be a year where 85 points or something makes it.
And I can't tell people what to think, but I would hope if the Sabres win 5 out of 7 at any point, you're happy with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, 5 out of 7 games to win, I think, is good. What I'm cautioning people is a lot of people think Anaheim stinks. Anaheim is the same record as the Sabres. They're both 500 in points percentage, and they've won 3 in a row and 4 out of 5. So don't think they're just going to go in Anaheim and just, well, if they lose that game, that's worse than Montreal. I mean, a lot of people might think that.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've actually been playing some pretty good hockey. So with that in mind, I think I would still go with Luukkonen with the day rest and then see how it goes. If he only faces like 20 shots or 25 shots, I'd be – the only problem is it's a night game going into
an earlier game the next
late
day.
Late afternoon
right.
game.
Right.
That might be a bit of a problem maybe, but if not, then I guess Reimer gets his first game as a Sabre.
Yeah, right, but it won't be revenge. He wasn't with San Jose. Oh, he was at San Jose before this, though, I think.
I believe he's played for every team.
Yeah, I think. I got to look at his career, but I feel like he had time in San Jose, so maybe that even still works. And we'll see what the Sharks do, Paul. The kid, Askarov, who got called up earlier this week, I think is making his NHL debut tonight.
He is.
So, maybe they see him Saturday night if it goes well for him tonight.
And that's in St. Louis, I believe?
Yes, correct.
So Buffalo will have back-to-back, but the Sharks will at least have to come back from a fairly large ways to get home and get ready for the game on Saturday.
Right.
Paul, thank you. Good work today. We'll talk again soon.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
There you go. That's our man, Paul Hamilton, on the Wester Hotline, and his appearances are brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide. And by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this.
I don't know how much I care which game it is, but I would definitely give Reimer one of the games. We're not in the must-win zone here.
Yeah.
There's 60 games left. He's on the team. He flew out west with them.
And Luukkonen just came back from missing an injury, you know, with an injury. I wouldn't want to push it either. I'd be stunned, especially the point Paul makes at the end there with the short turnaround. I mean, you know, because they're playing at 10:30 our time tomorrow night and then 8:00 our time on Saturday. I think back in the Stone Ages, I don't know if teams would play a goalie in both of those games, let alone now.
10 tomorrow, by the way.
So, 10, sorry.
Okay. Yeah. That's not a nothing flight either. Anaheim to San Jose, you know?
No.
That would, I mean, just that doesn't matter to me. It's just, I would, you're on the team. It's November.
Yeah.
You're getting one of these games. Go get it. 803-0550, Joe Ostrowski at 4, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR. Well, it's nice to see the Sabres win, or hear about it.
Sure.
5 out of 7. It started badly, and it's picked up. I don't think it's a playoff team, though. They're just, it's just so thin. I mean, they'll get Thompson back, and he's been playing well. Mm-hmm. And Lukanen is playing well. I don't think it's me saying this because I'm always kind of thinking this way, but I really do think, like, they need a move. They need one more guy. If there are injuries, you're just on the edge here. I know how packed the standings are, but it's not insane that it's that way. I mean, Florida is 10 points ahead of Montreal through 20 games. What's that extrapolate to? 40? Like, that's kind of what it should look like. It is true that there's a lot of, you know, jumble in the middle.
Right.
And the Sabres are a part of that, you know, which is good. But I think they need something else, you know?
I hear that. I mean, and even though the division right now is, I mean, they're 2 points behind Tampa. Tampa has played two fewer games. But, you know, so that they're close to even the third spot. But the Metropolitan is, you know, it's a little bit different. Like, that you go four deep at 25 points there. So it's not like the wild card is going to be that easy to obtain here. So somebody will probably get hot. And, you know, we'll see if Boston can get right. I mean, they just changed the coach. And, you know, they've been kind of a big disappointment this year. The goalie's off to a rocky start after missing camp and not getting a contract until the season had already begun and all of it. I just wouldn't assume that they're dead and buried. And then you're still in the race with the other teams that have been around you for a few years here that are on the similar rebuild track. A lot of good young talent, supplement with some veterans. Are we there yet? Ottawa, Detroit are those teams. Montreal probably belongs in there, but it has felt all summer and into the season already, even though their record is close enough to those other teams. I don't think they're where Detroit, Ottawa, and Buffalo are on the rebuild curve yet. They're, like, to me, a year behind or so. So I wouldn't expect them to be a team I'm slugging it out with for one of those spots, but I think Ottawa and Detroit are just as live as you at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you know, you're going to have to elevate here. I'm encouraged by the kind of the style of games they've won, especially their last two wins, were not games where, to my eyes, they had anywhere near their best stuff, but they managed to get it done. Last night and the win against St. Louis at home was not a game like that I felt like they're in control of. It was just sort of, it's like a lot of games in the league are that this team has lost often over the years. It's just sort of not a lot going on. It's 3-1, you lost, thanks for coming. You know, just not a lot of chances at either end. Just we get through the game, and they've won a couple of those recently. And, like, I'm encouraged by that because we know when this team's really rolling, and they've got Thompson, Tuck, and Paterka together, like, they've got a dominant top line that can have really good hot nights. To win when you're not even just not getting the hot night from those guys, but you don't even have one of them, it's a good sign, I think.
So I just have no confidence that this organization is going to swing the hammer. You know, like, if it's,
well,
not to be this way, but if it's going to be, like, good that they're in it again.
They got to do something to put it over the top.
Act like you want it.
Yeah. Well, all the big guys, I don't know, we haven't talked about this, and it's not come up with Paul in any of these recent visits here, as many of them as there have been. All the big guys last week took their turn with, my guess is Kevin Adams is telling Elliot Friedman, like, I'm people are calling about Byram and Dylan Cousins, but I don't want to trade them, but I'll make a big move. Like, he needs it out there that he's trying, because his reputation right now is that he can't get anything done.
It doesn't help him. We've had this conversation.
I know.
I think he thinks I think a lot of people would think it helps them to say that. It doesn't, because that's a given. That needs to be thought of as a given.
Right.
What you don't get credit for trying to make trades. It's a given that you should be trying to make trades. Mm-hmm. You get credit for making them that make your team better. And I would just appreciate the effort. You know, I can't. It's not fair to assume any move will work. But where's that one guy that we've been talking about for like 4 years up top that has is established as a not dominant but quality top six forward? Like, where is that one move that you're acquiring somebody that's not old, you know, that isn't just sort of a hit and hope kind of prospect type? Well, it's the same as ever. I mean, right. Until they do it. But good win. We will talk to Joe Ostrowski after sports. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.